If you've been tuning into any of the latest news about the government's potential plans, you've no doubt heard the H word, hydrogen. Mining magnate Andrew Twiggy Forrest was advocating its benefits on RN Breakfast yesterday.
I gave my team 3 months to convert a haul truck, one of those great big haul trucks you see running around mine sites all over the world, to a hydrogen fuel cell. They did it in under 3 months. That truck is working beautifully. Hydrogen, pull a bit of nitrogen out of the air, plenty of that, converts to green ammonia. And you can run ships running at nearly 100% green ammonia, and trains. We've got a green ammonia up to over 70% running in trains. We know now it can power everything. You can make fertilizer from it. You can make steel from it. It's a miracle molecule, which the fossil fuel sector would probably like us not to do. Really discover, but the secret is out and we should be using it everywhere because it has zero pollution.
That all sounds very promising. However, Mr. Forrest is getting behind green hydrogen over the government's more favoured blue option, and then there's grey. So what does that all mean, and how close to being viable is this replacement energy source? Let's see if we can pull this molecule apart, and any insights or responses from you are most welcome. With me is electrochemical engineer and expert in renewable energy technologies at the University of Newcastle, Dr. Jessica Allen. And Jessica, hello. Welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Michael.
What did you think of Twiggy Forrest's assertions on Breakfast yesterday?
Oh, some big claims there. And you know what? He's not half wrong. He's got some good science backing him up there.
Not half wrong. Does that mean that maybe there's parts of what he's saying that is still not close to being viable?
There's always caveats with new technology, and this is something new that we're talking about, and we're replacing existing infrastructure that's been around for many, many years now. So the speed of the transition, which Twiggy is really trying to get behind and really trying to accelerate, that's something that could be a bit challenging, but the technology itself to do exactly what he's saying is definitely viable.
Okay, so let's just drill down into at least what Mr. Forrest is up to outside Gladstone. He's investing millions in these green hydrogen hubs. What is that? What is going on in these hubs?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and he's got a lot of different investments in different states happening as well. Some interesting ones that are happening in Queensland. He's looking at putting in a manufacturing facility to actually make the technology that makes green hydrogen. And that's sort of part of a larger plan to make electrolyzers, which is how we make green hydrogen, but also making solar panels and wind turbines, and then making green hydrogen and green ammonia as well. So that's in Queensland. He's also talking about doing green hydrogen in New South Wales and in Western Australia, powering a lot of his mining fleet with green hydrogen. And the government is starting to get on board, the New South Wales government in particular, with their new announcements on hydrogen, in starting to develop a new export industry for hydrogen.
Yes. Now, there's so much in what you've just said there, Jessica, that we really need to pull apart. So perhaps we should start getting into the colours for definition before we move any further. So
definitely. Green
hydrogen is what?
Right. So hydrogen gas is colourless. Let's just say that to start with. It doesn't actually have a colour.
good. Okay. That's done.
So just lay that out straight away.
And just before you move on, it's also fair to say, is it not, that hydrogen is both a molecule and an element? Is that correct?
That's right. Yes.
Thank you. Good.
So when we think about hydrogen, what we're really talking about is hydrogen gas, which is two elements or two atoms of hydrogen that are joined together. Hydrogen as an element itself, by itself, is the most abundant element in the universe. It's basically a part of all things on Earth, right? Especially water. But hydrogen gas, just it doesn't appear naturally. It's not something that you can just mine or dig up. It just doesn't occur by itself. You have to make it.
By extracting it often from water in this case, yes?
Yeah, that's right. Most technologies, grey, green, blue, all of them, the hydrogen itself originates. It starts off as water. Some small differences there, because natural gas, so methane, already has hydrogen within that gas. So a little bit of the hydrogen also comes from the natural gas in that case.
Okay.
But most of them are coming from water.
So in Twiggy's, I make it sound like I'm a friend of his, if Andrew Forrest, oh, Andrew Forrest's assertions that he's pushing forward with what he sees as the future through green hydrogen, how is right. that hydrogen made that qualifies it as green?
Yeah, so let's talk through the different colours. So grey hydrogen is hydrogen that has come from water, but to get that hydrogen and to extract the hydrogen from water, you need quite a lot of energy. So in grey hydrogen, that energy comes from fossil fuels. So you can do, you can react water with coal or you can react it with natural gas, and you end up with hydrogen as a gas. Because there's also carbon in the coal and in the natural gas, you also end up with carbon dioxide. So grey hydrogen is hydrogen that we get from reacting water with fossil fuels, and we also have a carbon emission that is related with that. So that's grey hydrogen.
I take it in our striving towards some kind of net zero, that kind of formation of hydrogen through grey sources is kind of off the table, is it not?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's interesting because basically we do grey hydrogen quite frequently in industry. So it's already used globally. That's how we make ammonia fertilisers and a couple of other products from hydrogen in industry. And right. that's how we've done it so far. So
for
all
decades.
Of us have been using, yeah, for decades, we've been using fossil fuels to do that. So okay. part of the conversation is replacing those fossil fuels with a decarbonized route. But let's go through the different colours first. So
okay, so blue hydrogen, we've done grey.
Yep.
So blue is the one that the federal government has been often talking about in the lead up to some kind of energy plan. What does blue mean?
Right, so blue is exactly the same as grey. So we're reacting water with fossil fuels. We're making hydrogen and we're getting carbon dioxide. In blue, we take that carbon dioxide, pressurize it, and pump it underground and sequester it. So the idea is that the carbon dioxide isn't released, it's not emitted, and so it is a net zero or a carbon neutral way to get hydrogen. Still,
so this is all dependent, right? So this is all dependent, Jessica, on carbon capture and storage.
That's
which
right.
As yet, correct me if I'm wrong, globally has yet to be proven as a reliable technology.
Look, the technology itself works and we use it in industry. So carbon capture is done in processes like ammonia to actually remove carbon dioxide from the stream. It's done in other processing of natural gas and other hydrocarbons. So we already know how to do the technology. The thing is that those processes need carbon capture to make their process work. So it's worth right. paying for it, right? So
okay.
it's worth putting the money on the table for that.
And I take it that's quite an expensive process too, Jessica.
It can be. And it depends on how concentrated the carbon dioxide is in the stream. So, for example, pulling it out of the air where there's not very much carbon dioxide at all is quite difficult because it's very dilute. So you've got to try and concentrate that carbon dioxide out. And so there's various sort of levels of difficulty of capturing the carbon dioxide depending on its concentration.
Okay.
So in these technologies, it should be pretty concentrated, so not too much processing, but you never get 100% capture efficiency either. You can get sort of 90+, but it's difficult to get full 100% capture of the carbon dioxide.
So even if the technology is working well, you're still going to get carbon dioxide loss to the atmosphere?
You'll still have some emissions. And okay. I guess part of the concern with blue hydrogen is also around fugitive emissions. So to mine fossil fuels like coal, you have to pull it out of the ground. And often when you do that, gases escape from the mine shaft. In fact, about 10% of Australian emissions in 2020 were from fugitive emissions from mining. So as you're extracting the fossil fuels, carbon, methane actually is the one that's released. Which is has a very high greenhouse gas impact.
I think so 10 times the potency of carbon dioxide, I think.
25.
I remember reading.
25. 25, actually, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
so all right, so obviously
times.
There's some drawbacks there. Obviously some
there
drawbacks.
So it's not going to be 100% perfect, but it is pretty low emission, and it's definitely better than grey hydrogen.
Okay, so here we come to green, which is what
green.
Andrew Forrest has been advocating. Yep.
Yes,
how does this work?
So we take fossil fuels off the table altogether. They're not involved. They're not included in this route. So in this one, because we need – so water is really stable. That's why it's so abundant on the earth. So like I said, you need a lot of energy to split it apart into hydrogen and oxygen. So when you're using fossil fuels, you're using the energy of the fossil fuels. When you don't want to include the fossil fuels in the in that route, you have to use energy from somewhere else. And the idea with renewables is to use electricity. So we can use electricity to split water using a technology called electrolysis. And anyone who's done science in school probably might have seen an electrolysis setup. They're quite common and they're used to teach people about electrochemical reactions. And so electrolysis uses water as an input and electricity as an input, and it splits the water into hydrogen and oxygen. So no carbon involved in any step of that process, unless there's a little caveat, the electricity, right? So where do you get the electricity from? If it's from the grid in New South Wales, you're going to have a carbon impact of that. And in fact, it'll probably be worse than if you reacted water with a fossil fuel. It's more efficient to do that than to make electricity out of the fossil fuel and use that electricity to make hydrogen, right? So the best way to do it is to do electrolysis directly connected to renewable electricity.
Which could be a combination of wind and solar, I take it, at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
And maybe hydro.
Yeah, wind, solar, hydro. In fact, Tasmania has a bit of an edge over a few of the other states in that their grid is almost 100% hydro as it is. So they've got a very high renewable penetration on their grid. So that if you made it off the Tasmanian grid, you would have almost 100% renewable hydrogen there.
Okay, so that all sounds very attractive. But let's talk about the inputs on this. How much renewable energy does it take to form a green hydrogen industry that could sustain and power what we've come to expect in our lives?
Yeah, this is the billion-dollar question. And I think it is something to be wary of. Not concerned overly. We definitely have the land space. And this is part of why Australia has a competitive edge in this industry, is because we have incredible renewable resources, both solar and wind, and we also have land, right? We've got quite a lot of land areas, especially compared to countries overseas who want to use hydrogen, like Japan and South Korea, who just don't have the same amount of space.
So how much land do we need for this kind of venture?
I can't give you
not
the
down
exact
to the hectare, but are we talking here about vast solar farms just to get hydrogen
vast.
Up to viability?
Yeah. Right. So in order to build an export industry in sort of New South Wales that would rival our coal exports, for example, we basically have to almost triple our electricity grid. So the amount of electricity that we're generating, and it all has to come from renewable energy. So it's a lot of electricity and it's a lot of new renewables.
That's a lot of infrastructure too. Mind you, solar farms don't take too long to put up, do they, from memory?
Yeah, they're quite quick. And they're quite cheap now too. So solar and wind, the costs have fallen so dramatically over the years that it's the cheapest way to get electricity is to use solar and wind.
Okay.
So it's a cheap way. And so the next step in order to get the green hydrogen cheap is to make the electrolysis step cheap.
Gotcha. Okay. So if you just joined this conversation, we're pulling apart what it means if we have a hydrogen future in this country in some way as a mix of our energy inputs to the system that are going to be, net zero 50 friendly. My guest is electrochemical engineer and expert in renewable energy technologies at the University of Newcastle, Dr. Jessica Allen. And we're getting a couple of questions coming through on text, Jessica, if I can throw those at you. This
Great.
One comes from Lee, and I think it's really pertinent because Lee says, Michael, I haven't heard anything about the amount of water required or what's left after the process of electrolysis. I'm very interested. Can salt water be used or must it be fresh?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think that it's another one of these things, just like using up land, that we have to be aware of. Because when you're building a hydrogen export industry, you are basically consuming water, because that water will be split into hydrogen and then we ship it overseas. Where's all the water going to come from? Obviously, Australia is a water-constrained country in some areas. We have a lot of concerns over that. Driest continent on Earth, exactly. And the water that you use for electrolysis does have to be pure. You can't really use seawater. So what you have to do is desalination. So it will require new infrastructure in cleaning the water up, ready for electrolysis as well. If we were just to build our own hydrogen industry in Australia and just sort of power ourselves, we would have plenty, okay? So because hydrogen compared to normal sort of electricity generation from burning coal, that actually uses water as well. So they're quite comparable. It's when we start to talk about exporting huge quantities that we really have to think carefully about where that water is going to come from.
Now, Jessica, just on this, I take it, I mean, one of the implications of that is, of course, we then also have to run our desal plants on green hydrogen. Otherwise, yes. What's the point? But you keep talking about the export industry, and this is really vital for us to understand. Am I right in saying that we could supply our own energy needs without resorting to green hydrogen? But if you want to replace coal with a new export industry, then this is the way forward.
Got it in mind, Michael. Yeah, we have plenty of renewable energy, and with managed grids, with batteries, with a number of different storage options, we could easily decarbonize electricity in Australia with our resources. We have plenty. When you're starting to talk about exports, it's difficult to export electricity, right? So the idea is that we're basically exporting liquid sunshine in hydrogen.
Right. Okay. So if we replace coal with hydrogen as the export industry, does that also come with the same requisite number of jobs and employment, which of course is such a politically charged area at the moment?
Yeah, that's actually one of the sort of selling points of hydrogen in the hydrogen-based economy, is that it can create jobs. And it's not just in making hydrogen. And I think that Australia should also seize the opportunity to use hydrogen to make green products to export as well.
What do you mean?
Because that will also make more jobs. So we haven't even gotten into this. So you can use hydrogen and turn it into different products. One that's really interesting is green steel. So you can decarbonize steel making, which uses coking coal. So use coal to make steel and strip the oxygen from iron oxide. And we can replace that with hydrogen. There's technology development underway in that area. So green steel is a potential new manufacturing industry that we could ramp up here in Australia. So instead of exporting our hydrogen and our iron ore from Australia, we could use both of those resources and make green steel as the export. So that sort of keeps more manufacturing jobs here.
And also is great branding. I was going to say skills are transferable. That's great. But also I take it the exportable product, green steel, internationally secures a lot of great prestige for us too, along with carbon inputs in terms of subsidy. Yeah.
So we could potentially be supplying the products that the world needs. They need green, they need zero decarbonized products. We have the renewables, we have the technology, we have the people here to do that manufacturing. So we just need to transition them into this new green industry. And that's just one example. There's lots of different ones that we could go into.
Jessica, I want to throw three things at you and you can take your time to respond. Some of the disadvantages of hydrogen, no matter what colour it is, but let's go with green. It's difficult to transport. It can make metal brittle and it's 20 times more explosive than petrol. Discuss.
Yeah. So discuss. Okay. Right. Where do I start? So hydrogen, because this is a new industry, right? So we've been using and making hydrogen within industry for a long time, but the transport of it has been generally pretty short distances. So we haven't had to transport it overseas or long distances over land. So, and transporting hydrogen, because it's so little, it really pushes through all of the cracks. It can get out of containers where you'd think that it probably shouldn't get out of. Right. It needs to be stored in very carefully. And also liquefying hydrogen. So I talked about liquid sunshine before. That's when we turn the gas into a liquid and then export the liquid, because it takes up a lot less space as a liquid. So you can store a lot more of it. Right. But that's new technology, that long distance export. So, you know, we sort of talk about hydrogen like it's going to happen any second now, but there are still challenges. And the transport, you have rightly pointed out, so moving it around long distances, storing it safely for long periods of time, is part of that challenge.
I understand there's been a ship that's been equipped with the kind of storage facilities needed to transport hydrogen. It just hasn't been used yet.
Yeah, that's right. That was actually part of a blue hydrogen project and an agreement between Australia and Japan. And so they built the world's first hydrogen transport ship. So the technology is starting to be there, but, you know, it's new and it's still sort of figuring out how to do this properly and safely. And really, the regulation around hydrogen needs to accelerate as quickly as the technology does. So we need to be making sure we're doing it as safely and effectively as we can.
And over time, Jessica, does hydrogen make metal brittle?
Yes, it can. So that's part of it. It's sort of forcing its way through different sort of materials. So you have to use the right metals. We have a lot of development and knowledge in that area of how to store hydrogen safely. And we've got some researchers at the University of Newcastle. You could talk to more about that. It's not my expert area.
No, that's right.
But it certainly can do that. Okay. And what it can do in carbon steels is it combines with the carbon and actually makes little pockets of methane that you could then burn. So it can be very dangerous.
Speaking of danger, I have to say, in the lead up to us having a conversation today, Jessica, I went on Wikipedia and watched the old footage of the Hindenburg bursting into
flames. I knew you were going to say Hindenburg.
So, you know, here's where hydrogen was catastrophic. Is that something we need to be concerned about?
Well, we've used hydrogen safely in industry for years, right? We know how to handle it and we know how to engineer around it to make it safe. Everyone thinks about the Hindenburg. I know there's a very strong connection in people's minds between hydrogen and the Hindenburg because it was a hydrogen balloon that essentially exploded.
This is back in the 30s, of course.
Yeah. Step one of safely handling hydrogen is don't store it in a flammable container. And that is what they did not do for the Hindenburg. So the canvas itself caught fire and everything just burned. So step one, don't store it in a flammable container and you're going to be able to handle it a lot more safely and avoid any Hindenburg-based disasters. In terms of safety, like comparing it to petrol, like in a vehicle, petrol is also very flammable, of course. And I actually think petrol is a bit more dangerous because what petrol will do, if you puncture a tank of petrol in a car, it will pool and it will spill and it will stay in the area where you spilt it, right? So much more easy to catch fire and much more dangerous compared to hydrogen. Because hydrogen is so light, if you manage somehow to puncture the very, very strong tank that hydrogen is stored in a vehicle, that hydrogen would very quickly disperse. It doesn't sit around waiting to catch fire. It is still flammable. You still have to be careful with it. If you're comparing it to petrol, not really more dangerous. In fact, probably a bit safer.
Jessica, we only have a few seconds left, so I'm just going to wrap this with one final question, and that is, how far away do you think we are from seeing hydrogen as an energy source being used day to day in our lives here in this country?
Yeah, a few years ago I would have said, 10 years. But at the moment, it's just accelerating so quickly, it could be in the next 5 years. The sort of aim for the government is to get it at a cost competitive price by 2030. So by 2030, we should be well and truly into this. But, you know, at the rate that Twiggy's moving, it could be a lot sooner than that.
Yes, well, of course, he also has to have the influence to change other people's minds. And we, you know, there's various mixed feelings in the community about Andrew Forrest, but be that as it may, whoever's got the message needs to be heard, I guess. And you've been fantastic at conveying for us too. Jessica, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Jessica Allen, electrochemical engineer, expert in renewable energy technologies at the University of Newcastle, with an explainer about our hydrogen future, potentially.